G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Bid a very good morning to Adam White.
Morning, Whitey.
Morning, Harf. I'm a bit speechless this morning, to be honest.
What's happened?
Watching the football last night. I cannot believe that the team that I thought would win the premiership, the team that played in the grand final last year, would play a game of football where they would kick three goals for the match. They would lose to the 17th-ranked Sydney, and the three goals that were kicked were all from free kicks. This is not the team that I thought they'd be, obviously. I knew that they weren't playing good footy going into the game, but they were at least playing winning football. But to serve up what they did last night was the biggest shock for the season for me. I can't think of a bigger shock. So, hello.
That's real sort of hanging on stuff after a game of footy. You've had some sleep, you've got some rest, and you wake up and you're still in that mode of disbelief for the Giants. I wonder what Adam Romanowski thinks about all that, because he's an expert commentator these days. I've heard him do some great things on the wireless as an expert. That's what they call him. He's a Bombers Premiership player. These days he's a manager to the Stars, and he's our best friend on a Friday. Rama, good morning.
Very good morning. Very good morning. I don't think Whitey's actually slept. He watched the replay by the look of the shock on his face at the moment. We're fortunate enough that we can still see each other via Zoom, and there's a bewildered look on his face still from last night's game. And look, to be perfectly honest, I'm a little bit the same, Whitey. It's you just don't know what GWS you're going to get, and we've got a really, really bad version of GWS this season.
Well, I think you do know what you're going to get, in a sense, because the lack of intensity, the lack of proactive ball movement, these sorts of things have been the case for most of this year. And I said this to you and you disagree with me about 6 weeks ago, and I said it was most of last year. It was most of last year. I just can't believe that it's continued. And even last night when they got behind, when they had to start to move the ball quickly, they didn't know what to do. They lost their structure. They're completely lost. This is the team that played in the grand final last year. I mean, we talk about Adelaide, and Adelaide's dramatic because of what had happened, and you know, they played in the grand final and they completely fell off the cliff. The Giants aren't necessarily falling off the cliff, but they've got a hell of a lot more good players than Adelaide, and they're playing like that. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, Harf, also we should make sure we spend some time on Sydney and their change as a football club. They've still got a lot of injuries, obviously. You know, two of their very best players are not playing, in Franklin and Josh Kennedy at the moment.
And Heaney.
And Isaac Heaney.
And Heaney, of course, of course. But the amount of young players now they have blooded, and what they've got moving into the future and how that's going to change the look. When you think of Sydney, you think of this dour, contested football stoppage type of team. That's how we've always thought of Sydney. But now they've got some real speed in that team, and real excitement.
They do. They do. My word, they do. Little Robottom's my man. He's going beautifully. He's a ripper. I like the way he takes the game on. He's a go-forward player. Is James Robottom, and I think that is a very important thing. Too many players these days, and certainly from the Giants' perspective, are not go-forward players. They are go sideways, go backwards players.
I agree with you, Rama, because I think there was a criticism of John Longmire that he only coached a certain way, and that it was a really dour way. And if you're a Sydney supporter, you never really enjoyed watching your football team play because of the way they play. But he has proven that he can change. And what he's also proven, Harf, and we've spoken about this a lot, is that you can change your style within a season. Because what he's doing now is clearly different to what he was doing even just 6-7 weeks ago. He's been able to coach them, educate them to play differently within a season when we're often told that's impossible.
But that's recognising the personnel, I think, Whitey. Once those injuries hit, he recognised he had to play a different way because of what type of player he had coming into the team. He's been able to adapt. You still see when they cut to the coach's box at times, when they do make a mistake with their ball movement, you see John looking over to his assistant coaches and going, "What are you doing?" and you know, getting angry. But I think he's adapting to that now a lot better. And just the future looks pretty good for the Swans. They're probably maybe a key forward short. Obviously, Franklin's still there for a couple of more years, but they might be just a key forward short.
They might need Franklin the way they're going. Now, everyone needs Buddy Franklin. It's a stupid thing to say. Considering he doesn't play anymore, effectively, he hasn't played for a long time, the Budster.
Yeah.
He's falling into the Joe Danaher territory in Sydney at the moment. They might be better off playing him without him, or get to the situation that that Clarko had with him the year before he left, I think it was, Raymond, where he became just part of the machine in that forward half for them, as opposed to being one of the real focal points.
I just feel when Franklin does come back, if they continue on with this style of play, it's going to suit Franklin a lot more because the ball will move quicker.
Yeah, that's true.
And it just makes a lot of sense to... Like, Franklin, I can guarantee you when he comes back, he'll be still quick, he'll be still agile, he'll be still all those things that we know and love about Franklin, but he'll have the ball coming inside the forward 50 a lot more with a one-on-one situation.
That is true. They seem, the Giants to me, to be paralysed with expectation.
Yeah.
Paralysed.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
With expectation. That they have got a list, I was going through it before actually, what have I done with that, of players that you would want to have to mould into a game style that is quite expansive, but they've fallen for the old chestnut of playing the systems that seemingly the middle and the average teams play, where it's that safe stoppage, down the line numbers, forward territory sort of game, when they've got a team that seemingly, when you look at them individually, you would love to see play a game that is expanded on the ground and making the ground really big and using all of it to stretch defences and take away the congestion possibility from a opposition perspective to stop their flow and stop their energy and mojo, so to speak. I just think what's happened last year and the expectation that comes with that, they look paralysed to me, that they're so scared of not being able to get back to that point they can't physically play. I don't know, it's just an observation I had last night watching the game again.
It feels like, Whitey, that they only want the ball in particular players' hands. It's got to go to Whitfield, or it's got to go to Zach Williams, or it's got to go to Josh Kelly to move the ball fast. And these other guys then are just left almost to be foot soldiers. But the reality is that they're good enough. They're more than capable, obviously, these players. A lot of them are very, very high draft picks. But I think, yeah, that being burdened by expectation half is a really good way to put it. I still disagree with you, Whitey, a little bit. I think last year they were a very good team. They won some good football. They played some good football. They had a really awful day in a grand final, which we know about. But that prelim final against Collingwood when it was wet, where we all thought they were going to lose. No Canelio, no Toby Green. The Giants are a completely different team without Toby Green, because he's just simple X factor.
True.
There's no other way to describe Toby Green as a footballer. He's X factor. He's a matchup nightmare. He's aggressive. He hits the scoreboard. He makes things happen when others can't. When they play without him, they just look like a team. They just look like a run-of-the-mill team.
Yeah, but when he plays, even this year, he's saved them at times. He hasn't made them play well. He's just simply saved them.
Because he's that good. He's that good and important.
Yeah, but I made this comment, Rammer, about the Giants a while back. Last year, their home and away record was 13 wins, 9 losses. They weren't a dominant team. Now, they won 3 finals where they played extremely well against the Bulldogs. They fell over the line against Brisbane, and they had a really good quarter against Collingwood. So it's not like they were a dominant force. Now, we think they as it goes to Daniel's point, we think they should be a dominant force based on their list. And it's a high-end list, and then they continue to trade off a star player and get multiple first-round picks coming in. And, you know, we know of Ash and Green coming through this year, Caldwell the year before. You know, there's plenty of talent. But there is something lacking, and it's as if Leon Cameron thinks that if they play fast, he can't trust them to defend. So it's better to play slow so they do defend, because defensive football teams win premierships. That's what it feels like from the outside, that he doesn't trust them to go fast, because it's the only explanation I can come up with. Like, last night was a bit different. Like, they didn't move the ball quickly, but at least they got the inside 50s up. Yeah, but amazingly, yeah, they had 52 inside 50s for three goals, which were all from free kicks. Dodgy free kicks.
Ten scoring shots.
So there's a lot wrong. And I'll tell you now, and it goes to my point, and I don't mean to put you in a compromising position here, Rama, but if I'm if I am Jeremy Cameron or if I am Ben Brown, I'm knocking on the door of my coaches in the next little period of time and saying, if you're going to play like that, that's fine. I understand, but I'm out. I'm going to go to play at a football club that moves the ball quickly and gives myself a chance, because this is thoroughly unenjoyable. And that's certainly the case with Jeremy Cameron, who is out of contract going into next year, and, you know, obviously the Ben Brown situation. That's what I'm going to say.
If you obviously watch a lot of football,
Yes.
Which team would you like to see the Giants play like? Yes. Which team would you like to see the Giants play like?
Port Adelaide or Richmond? Port Adelaide or Richmond? Maybe not Richmond.
No, they're a different team. Port Adelaide. They're different to Richmond. I think they're a more expansive team than Richmond.
Yeah.
I would love to see them really change the model of football as it's played at the moment. If there's one team, if there's one of the teams capable of doing it, I think it's the Giants who's capable of breaking open this style of play that seemingly everyone's tacked on to with Rama, that not only is unattractive, but doesn't suit so many players who have always been talented players who can play the game, who are forced into the system that seemingly does not make any sense to them at all. As individual players.
Well, everybody knows now what to do when you're playing the Giants. Because of their ball movement, you have the ability then to drop numbers back behind the football, and then you clog up GWS's forward line, and they're choked. That's why when they look up, because they've gone sideways, backwards, inside, outside, 10 different times with the ball before they pass centre, a Whitfield or a Cornelio or a Kelly or a Caldwell look up, and they see 15 Guernseys of the other team just sitting and waiting for them inside their forward 50. So take the risk. Jeremy Cameron's kicked 70 goals in a season a couple of times. Obviously, you've got Toby Green. Their forward line's still very... Finlayson's kicked 30-odd last year. Himmelberg's kicked 30-odd last year. You saw Himmelberg in the last quarter. You've read his lips. Just kick the ball. He said it to one of his players up the field. Just kick the ball.
I got in trouble last night at home because so many times I'm just saying to the television, go, go, go. Yeah. Like, they get the ball on half back, and Haynes is really like this. They just stop and they don't go. And, you know, like, why I get so emotional about it is that there are very few teams in the competition that can entertain you as a neutral supporter. That you can turn on the television and go, Joe, I'm really looking forward to the footy tonight because of the way a team plays. Now, the Giants have the capacity to be that team.
Yeah.
But it's like an actor putting them in a shocking movie. And you just go, you're wasting your talent here. You know, it makes you more frustrated. And at least tonight, you turn on the television and you know that Port Adelaide is going to try and entertain. And that's why I get frustrated with Geelong, because they're the same. You know, sometimes they play and you go, this is such a letdown.
I think next week, GWS next game, whoever they play against, I haven't had a look yet.
West Coast.
Okay.
We might do the week after.
What I would love to see them do, and this is just me, when they take a mark, play on. Just
I'd love
play
to know
on.
The mark play on percentage, actually.
Yeah. Because what that will do is that will make your forward up the ground move.
Yep.
It creates the uncertainty for a defender. If you mark and go back, if you turn into a kick mark team, you're easy to defend. The best player in the competition that marks the ball and plays on is Dustin Martin. That then creates movement ahead of the ball, and it creates space. So you can kick the ball anywhere. I'd love to just see GWS get the ball and play on more often. That's all. Just one simple change. You don't need to change your whole game plan around. One simple change, guys. This week, We're aiming for, let's call it 20 marks a quarter. I want to play on, if we can, from 15 of those marks. 15 of those marks, if they're through the middle of the ground and across halfback. Let's play on and let's try to move the ball.
See, the last one on this, because there's plenty of other really interesting stories that are floating around outside footy, and we can get back to it with Boomer later on. But a good text here. Who has the best list? The Giants or St Kilda?
Probably the Giants. Giants, yeah.
The Giants, yeah.
Who's got the better coach?
Well, who knows? Raptors only just started. They play a different brand. That's not necessarily a better coach. They just play a different brand.
The Giants have got more talent on their list than any other team in the competition.
No, there's no doubt about that. There's a lot of coaches that would like to coach them.
Of course.
I don't know. That's enough. I'm a bit over it. Very emotional.
Trying to just have some time out. Just straight to your room for a little while. Just a 10-minute time out. Just chill out.
Just turn the Zoom off. Mute his microphone.
No, I need your advice, actually. I need your advice. This is more your wheelhouse, Whitey, but Rama, jump in. There was a situation, speaking of rage and anger, there was a situation yesterday at home. Now, the world champ, due to the COVID-19 situation, she works from the front room these days, which is overlooking the front yard, which is nice, and the garden out the front, the picket fence, all that sort of stuff. It's nice. It's a nice outlook. Some sunshine coming in, natural light. She was in the middle of a Zoom call yesterday for work, and all of a sudden she sees these two middle-aged women walking past, and they stop at the front gate, and they have a bit of a look over the fence. That's okay, no dramas. Then they open the gate and enter the premises and come and start sniffing the Daphne and then snipping some Daphne and just walking out again. Is that acceptable behaviour from people to walk into your house, open the front gate and walk 10 metres, 5 metres, into the premises to the garden bed and start pinching your Daphne?
That's unbelievable.
Oh, boy.
What's going on? Now, the world champ's grandmother will be listening to this. She gets up early and listens to this. She'd be aghast.
Does she listen on the app?
No, she listens on the wireless. A grandnan would be listening. What the hell is going on, she'd be saying. She'd be outraged by this. You don't do that, do you? Don't go into someone's house and pinch their flowers, do you? Hanging over the fence, maybe, but surely not inside the gate walking in there.
Well, I think a simple knock on the door would be perfect. Look, we're walking past, we've seen the beautiful flowers. You can still knock on somebody's
door. In COVID times.
You knock on the door and you go back behind the picket fence.
Well, I'm telling you now. You can't enter the premises,
can you? No. I think that's a step too far.
I'm aware of your Daphne situation.
Well, you know my Daphne.
It's something to be proud of. It is something to be proud of. There's no question about that.
I didn't even know we had Daphne until last night.
However, that's borderline a criminal offence.
This is what I'm thinking.
I would, and again, and then under different circumstances, if you want to get involved in that sort of activity to take a cutting, you are needing to acknowledge this. You know, on the door. Mm. Look, we walked past. This might sound a little bit strange. Your Daphne, your front yard is fantastic. Would you mind if we take a cutting to take home and try and essentially replicate what you've been able to do in your front yard? This is the sort of thing that needs to take place. You can't open, because you've got a latch gate situation.
It's a latch gate situation.
You can't open and actually go inside the premises. What did they have a pair of secateurs with them?
Well, no, I haven't got that level of detail. The world champ's still, she's sort of just sitting there, a stunned mullet sort of stuff, for the last, for the last 12 hours. She hasn't frozen,
well,
hasn't unfrozen yet.
What about the stand up and sort of knock on the window so they can see?
Well, she's in the middle of the Zoom call. She's hosting the Zoom call at work. You can't just...
I would have dropped the headphones straight outside.
Yeah. No doubt. I wouldn't have cared who's on there. Yeah. At the very least, I would have been banging on the window going, oi, oi. Yeah.
Yeah, straight outside for me, half. What are you doing? There was this kid. I'll give you a little other story. There was this kid a couple of years back, and he just came into our driveway and started playing basketball. And I've sort of gone to the front door, and I've said, "Hey, LeBron James, what are you doing, mate?" And he sort of looked at me, and then he just ran away, took his basketball and ran away.
Yeah, that's unacceptable as well.
Exactly.
Can't be just using other people's things in their front yards. Yeah. What the hell's going on in the world?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's a very good question.
Like, it's like when you go to the park or a beach scenario and you're playing cricket with the kids and a kid from someone you don't know just decides to join in and start playing, be a participant, and you're just not sure how to handle that situation. Do you let them get involved, or do you, like, you don't know who they are, you don't know where their parents are, but they've got this real, you know, look on their face, "I really just want to be involved." You go, "What do you do here?"
I can't work it out. I can't work it out what's happening. Krazzo reckons he...
No, that's really...
Someone come to his door and ask if he could take a shower. True story. Now, I would find that...
No.
Most unusual, but no. I'm not doubting Krazz. No, I'm not doubting Krazz's contribution to the program this morning. Another one here. Old mate Dez would not appreciate someone smelling his Daphne. That's from Horry. Of course, that's a great little neighbours gag from back in the old days. Dez and Daphne. some interesting feedback coming through. Anyway, I don't think you can just go around, enter the premises, take the Daphne, and then take off. I'm just not sure that's business. That's kosher. Just my take.
Of course it's not.
Caulfield tomorrow for Pembury Lawrence Day, and we're looking forward to a big day of racing. So let's have a look at the first leg of the quaddie. Give you a chance to sharpen your pencils on a Friday morning before you get too serious on Saturday. First leg is race number 6, the Crozet Stakes. We love the Crozet. Always good fun. 3-year-old fillies Group 3 events. And as Dino said, the young horses coming out for the first time often in this race. There's a few going with some race experience this campaign, Dino. One of those is the favourite, Parlophone, for Mick Price and Mick Kent Jr. D. Oliver in the saddle, $2.40 at tab.com.au.
Yeah, she's a good filly, Daniel, as she proved in the Lightning Stakes. As she proved first up when she won at Sandown, she actually bucked just after the start, probably lost 3 or 4 lengths and still got up and won. The horse she beat, Peggy Celine, won on Wednesday at Sandown. And then her win in the Lightning Stakes in Adelaide was outstanding, the way she just cut through the field and then, you know, quickened up. It was a really big win down the outside, and she's a good chance. I think there's a filly here that... could be one of the stars of the spring in the 3-year-old fillies ranks, and that's Agreeable, kicking off her campaign. She's had the one run at Geelong. It was an effortless win, and recent jump out looked terrific. I think she's ready to go, and she'll be back off the speed, but if the brakes go her way at the right time, she's got a massive winning chance. No knock on Parlophone. She's one of the good chances, but I'll be including a few in this leg of the quaddie. I'd also include 7 Fresh, who... looked very good in her first campaign, won at Geelong, ran well in a Blue Diamond preview and then tapered off, but has trialled up well. 5, Bella Nipotina. She's won over $500,000 in prize money, hasn't won a race. She's a good filly, she's fast, she's trialled really well. She'll give a great sight for a long way. And 6, Euphoric Summer, who looked in the shadow.
Oh, no. Well, we've lost the Dino. We've lost Dino there.
She can certainly improve.
Oh, he's back. He's back. There he is. Sorry, Dino. He just dropped out for a second there.
I'm back.
You are.
There you go. NBN working beautifully. I'm not sure where we got to, Daniel, but I think Bella Nipotina and Euphoric Summer are the two that I was talking about. And Euphoric Summer had no luck behind Parlophone. So I'll be putting 5 horses in the first leg of the quaddie. I think principally Agreeable and Parlophone are the best chances. But I'd want a few running there.
Quinny, Agreeable is quite a good price, I could see on the tab.com.au website. That's a good start for the punters if we can get that home early doors.
Absolutely. Currently a $10 chance, Agreeable in the first leg of the quaddie in from 11. And Agreeable's been the best back runner early doors for the 1,000 guineas. She's firm from $15 into 10. Hopefully she can salute at $10 tomorrow for us, Dino. But would you be taking a slice of the pre-post price for the 1,000 guineas? Do you think she could progress that way, and would you rate her as a leading chance for a race like that?
Oh, I think so. I don't know if I'd take that. I like the $10 24 hours out rather than 6 weeks out, so 8 weeks out. But I think I'll go with the price tomorrow.
That makes sense. That
Why
makes
not
sense.
Have both?
Well, because you can wait. You got the $10 tomorrow, mate. I'm with Dino on that one. Take your money early. Take your money early rather than having to wait 15 years for it. That makes sense to me. Any other major movers there, Quinny?
The favourite has been pretty popular as well. Parlophone, 280 into 240. Fresh, a $6 second to length, then Bella Nipotina at 9. But Agreeable's the firmer at odds, and the favourite has been pretty popular as well.
All right, so Adam Romanowskis has one job with us here on the Friday Form. That is to be the scribe. He takes down the numbers, hopefully. Rama, what are the numbers for the first leg of the quaddie tomorrow, please, at Caulfield?
12, 3, 7, 5, and 6.
12, 3, 7, 5, and 6 for Dino in the first leg tomorrow. Let's have a look at the second leg, the Regal Roller Stakes. Now, Dino, can you explain to me this? Regal Roller used to dominate the 1,400 metres at Caulfield. And this race is a listed race, which is fantastic, but it's over the 1,200. What the hell's going on?
Well, Maccabi Diva never won a 1,600 metre race at Flemington either, Daniel. So we do these sort of things.
No, that's a fair point. It's a fair response. But I used to love Regal Roller.
Yeah, exactly.
The 1,400 at Caulfield. What a great horse. And there's a couple of good horses in this one too. Viridine is favourite, but Big With Your Mother had a jump out during the week. Looked pretty sharp. Reykjavik's there. We've got Bumper Blast, Asia Chivalry. And Viridine is the favourite at 310 at tab.com.au, Dino.
Yeah, and look, I've got him as the one to beat. He's won two of his last three. His one defeat was when the conditions really suited Jungle Edge. Now, we're on weather watch for this race because if it rains, of course, Jungle Edge's chances improve immensely. But I'm with Viridine. I'm giving good chances to Age of Chivalry, who only had the little cameo preparation in the autumn, but last spring he was very good. He looks to have trialled up well. He looks ready to go. Bumper Blast might be the sort of this year's version of Be Good to Your Mother. He's built a really good profile, lightly raced, might be on Rupert Clark Stakes path, I'd imagine. He can run well, but Jungle Edge is right there, especially if it, and he does need it to rain, and Be Good to Your Mother first up. So whilst it's a small field, there's a lot of challenges in this race because we've got a few first up and we've got those ones race fit, and then you get the weather complication as well.
Quinny, there seems to be a bit of a spruik about Be Good to Your Mother back this campaign. Is that reflective of the punters' investments?
A $6.50 chance here has been solid at that quote. The money has been for Viridine and Bumper Blast. Viridine, 320 into 310. Bumper Blast, $7 into 480. Age of Chivalry has been a little bit soft, 440 out to 5. Jungle Edge, 10 into 950. So a bit of specking there for those that are predicting a bit of rain around. And then She Shall Fly, a $12 chance. But Viridine has been the best back runner in the second leg of the quaddie.
I see, Dino, the number 7 at Miami Bound, the Oaks winner, is back tomorrow. What would you be expecting or hoping for her this campaign?
Well, you just want to see her do something in the first couple of runs, Daniel, because she didn't come up at all in the spring, in the autumn, I should say, with those two runs. But kicking off tomorrow, I think if she's just getting to the line warming up, 1,200's too short. But the next couple of runs, she'd want to do something.
All right, Ramat, please. What are the numbers? Race 7, the second leg of the quaddie tomorrow.
2, 6, 8, 1, and 3.
2, 6, 8, 1, 3 there. And the Regal Roller Stakes. What a good horse he was. The Regal. Let's get to race number 8, the PB Lawrence Stakes, the feature event on the card, the 1,400 metres weight for age group 2 event. And we've got them coming from all over the place to be a part of this. From WA, they're jumping on board. We've got jockeys quarantining, Dino, to make sure they can partner these magnificent beasts in the race tomorrow. We've got a really good field going around. Mystic Journey upon resumption is the favourite, though, at tab.com.au at around about $4.
It is a fantastic race, Daniel, and you've absolutely hit the nail on the head with the variety of form lines from three or four different states. And look, I had a great difficulty with this race. I'm just going to throw 6 in the quaddie and hope for the best result, really. For a tip, I'm tipping Sabatiano. I think James Cummings has had Hartnell run well in this race in recent years, and it's a race he sort of targets. And 1,400 for her first up off a good draw. I think she could run very well. She's trialled well in Sydney, Sabatiano, And the fact that they, you know, with the border lockdowns, to commit to this race means that she's going to be running in Melbourne. So this is obviously a good kicking off point for her. I think Arcadia Queen is the most talented horse in the race, but we just don't know what we're going to see, not having raced for 10 months and never seen a soft track. But I respect her talent. I think the best roughie in the race is Sir Coney. I think he's got the race fitness on his side. He beat a Group 1 winner in Dreamforce over this track and distance on wet ground, Caulfield Cup Day a couple of years ago. This is more like a grand final for him than any other horse in the race, I think, anyway. So that's why I'm giving him a chance. But Mystic Journey, terrific mare, looks to have trialled up well. I think Kingswell Dreams trialled really well. And Streets of Avalon, he's a 1,400-metre specialist at Caulfield, a Futurity Stakes winner, but he usually peaks third up, so the Memsie in 2 weeks is probably the race that he's going to be absolutely at his best. But they're the six I'm including, but with no conviction at all.
Sounds good to me. Just on Mystic Journey, before we get to Quinny and find out what's happening in the market there in a compressed market, I think, from a good field, Billy Egan's in the saddle tomorrow. Anthony Darmanin is normally the jock. Billy's in the saddle tomorrow. Does that change what you might expect to see from Mystic Journey, the hands of Billy as opposed to Anthony?
Yeah, I think he's been riding her a bit of work this week and getting to know us. I think I heard Adam Trinder with Michael Felgate yesterday mention that. So, it is a differential, and it's for the first two rides, and whether Anthony Darmanin with the borders changing around in time, we'll be able to reassociate with Mystic Journey. But I don't think there's anyone, for their profile has elevated more than Billy Egan in the last 12 months. And if you get a chance to see, he won a race yesterday on a horse called Criminal at Sale. It's as good a ride as you'll ever see the way he cut through that field. And he's in great form.
No, he's one of my favourites, Big Billy. Love him. Love his work. Dino, good from you. Quinny, what about from you? What's happening in the market?
Well, Mystic Journey won this race as a $2.15 favourite last year. Has been $3.60 out to $4.20 back into $4 this time around. Arcadia Queen has been a market mover, $6 into $4.60. And Savatiano, $9 into $7 earlier on in the week. Subsequently, $7 into $5 out to $6 since the barrier draw.
Right. Okay. So, Rama, I need some numbers from you, please.
Yes. 10, 9, 6, 8, 2 and 3.
10, 9, 6, 8, 2, 3 are your numbers for the third leg tomorrow at Caulfield. The feature event, the PB Lawrence, it is a cracking race. Great field. Looking forward to that being a part. Precursor of what's going to be a huge spring. And to round out the quaddie, we need the last leg. We've already got the first three. That's a given from the numbers Dino's given us. But we need the last leg, and that is over the 1,400 metres, a benchmark 84 affair. Plenty going around, Dino, full field, and we've got number four in those Peter's colours, those famous Peter's colours, the pink with the white cross across the breast of the silks. Showmanship is going for five in a row, and he's $1.80 at tab.com.au.
Yeah, he's an exciting horse, Daniel. He's done all of his racing at Belmont. He just gets off that bend and then just swoops home and wins. It's a really interesting race, this, because I think he's a very smart horse. I think he's way overbet. And for mine, there's huge value here in a horse called Junipel, who resumes off a long spell, but he's been gelded. He's trialled up, I think, really nicely. He's been trialling without the blinkers on. He's got the blinkers on race day. He's going to get back, but he loves wet ground. And I just think at the odds, I think he's got a really good chance, Junipel. But no real knock on Showmanship other than the price. I think he's a little bit short. And the other one I'd include for the quaddie is Wilmot Pass, who probably should have won at Moonee Valley last start, victim of barrier one there at the Valley, and maybe looking for 1,400 metres. But so I think Junipel's a really good price to find out how he's going, and I suspect he's going very well.
Well, let's find out what that price is, because Showmanship's $1.80, sort of stifling a lot of the betting, Quinny. What is Junipel out on top selection, please?
Currently 23 the win and $5 the place for Junipel. Trimmed up a little bit from $26 since the market opened on Wednesday. So it will be interesting to see if there's support over the next couple of minutes. I dare say there will be. The best back runner is Showmanship, $2.20 into $1.80. Wilmot Pass at $8.
Right. Okay. So $23 is our on-top selection in the last leg of the quaddie. That's exciting. I wonder I wonder if it's the Rama Ruffy. We'll find out after the break, Rama. But before we do that, what are the numbers, please, in the last leg?
2, 4, and 14.
2, 4, and 14. You know what's happened? I just got a text from my mate. He's just woken up again. He wakes up always at the wrong time. And he goes, I've just heard the last leg numbers. Can I please have the entire...
Needs to set his alarm earlier.
I know he does. I need to have the entire set of numbers, please, for the quaddie tomorrow at Caulfield. Can you help me out?
Okay, race 6, 12, 3, 7, 5, 6. Race 7, 2, 6, 8, 1, and 3. Race 8, 10, 9, 6, 8, 2, and 3. And then race 9, 2, 4, and 14.
What about the Formula Bet, Dino? We've got people registering from all over the nation to be a part of this with you at rsn.net.au. What's the Formula Bet for tomorrow at Caulfield, please?
Yes, well, the contestant is for the all-up is Joel Price from the mecca of Victorian sport at the moment, Wangaratta, as they put in their bid for the grand final. and for Joel, we're having a $40 win bet, race 1, number 1, Sovereign Award, $40 the win, race 6, number 12, Agreeable, and $40 on the all-up of the pair, race 1, number 1, into race 6, number 12, for Joel Price of Wangaratta.
Well, we know that Agreeables was $10 or so. Quinny, what does that come to? What's Sovereign Award?
Sovereign Award's even money, so the double comes to $20.
Nice. Race 1, number 1 into race 6, number 12, $20 is the Formula Bet for Dino this week. And good luck to the mighty people of Wang. I'm sure they'll all support the Formula Bet tomorrow. Dino, Junipel, I just want to bring your attention to something. Junipel, you said not long ago, was your on-top selection for race 9 tomorrow at Caulfield, last leg of the quaddie. It was $23 when we spoke. At the tab currently, it's $17. Is it your Rama Ruffy?
Yeah, a bit of a spoiler alert there, Daniel. It is the Rama Ruffy, and let's hope that the last race is very kind to us and he can get over the top. I know it would spoil Nicholas's party because he's man-crush man Willie Pike's on the favourite, but... Well, I'm hoping Junipel gets over the top of it late.
So, Quinny, what do you think, now that we've got history in this sort of situation where we're having Rama Ruffy long odds last legs, they come in to almost a third of the price at times. What do you think, Quinny, Junipel will start tomorrow?
What price do I think? Well, I think you'd probably be better off asking Dino that one, but currently 23 into 17. And if you do like showmanship, you'll probably now get black figures because hopefully the favourite can push out a little bit with the support for Junipel. And just like the little girl with the burritos, why not have both? We can back Junipel and showmanship in the lucky last on the program.
Oh, gee, Quiddy.
The little girl with the burrito. Wasn't it a taco? Wasn't she working on the taco?
It was a taco. Clearly a taco.
We haven't heard from Whitey for the last 25 minutes until we mentioned bloody tacos and burrito. It was a soft shell or a hard shell. She wanted both. So they put together a little, you know, fantastic soft
and
hard.
And you've got to go, you got to go soft.
Well, the couscous conversation, again, Grandnan, who was listening to this the other day, Beck's grandma, she was couldn't believe that Whitey hadn't come across the couscous in his time, Dino.
I've come across it, but I just don't have it.
Do you like the finer or the pearl couscous?
I'm the finer couscous man.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
Yeah. You leave the pearl out of it. What's that, Whitey?
Why is the finer couscous better?
Just has a more agreeable texture for me.
I agree. Yeah.
Just a texture.
So how would you eat it? Would you sprinkle it over like a salad situation, or you just eat it in a teaspoon type scenario, just eat it on its own?
Oh, you can flavour it with whatever you like. You could even put bacon in it if you liked, Adam.
Oh, yes.
Oh, tomato sauce.
Everything's better with bacon.
Everything's better with bacon. That's a hashtag that hasn't been used enough, Dino. We might need to get that trending.
That's right.
Everything's better with bacon. Dino, we'll let you go and get some rest and get ready for a big Saturday of PB Lawrence Day at Caulfield tomorrow. We appreciate your time as always. Thank you, mate.
Terrific. Thank you, Daniel.
Good stuff. Dean Lester, the world's greatest form analyst, who joins us on The Breakfast Club every Friday as part of the Friday form. Quinny, I haven't seen the paper today or your selections in the paper today. What's your investment for us tomorrow?
I'm going to bookend the program. Sovereign Award in the first, Showmanship in the last. I think we'll get about $4 tomorrow on that double. And in race number three, I like the second outsider of the field, a good each-way bet with race three, number two, R. Campana, trained by an up-and-coming bloke named Peter Moody, and I think can get the job done there at a nice quote.
Well, the Bulldogs won't be holding on for the draw. They'll be looking for a big win this week against the Adelaide Crows, currently sitting in 11th position on the AFL ladder. And Marcus Bontempelli will like to do something about that as the captain in the build-up to the game on Sunday. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Bont.
Good morning, gents. Hope you're all well.
We are well, mate. How are you and the team up there?
Yeah, going well too, mate. Obviously, been in the hub for quite a few weeks now, but everything they've got up here for us, and obviously the football perspective is all moving along. Just need to chase up a few more wins now.
Yes. Well, that'd be great for the Bulldogs players and the supporters alike across the country. Did the family arrive yesterday? Have you got families arriving?
Yeah, our last sort of group of partners and families did arrive yesterday, which there's some sort of film and video taken, and being able to see them almost reunite after a number of weeks was quite special. And I know all those that did, it meant a lot to sort of see their partners and families again after not being able to see them for a little while. So, some great scenes and some great moments, that's for sure.
Does it change the vibe of the group when you that happens? Because I imagine it probably has to, doesn't it?
Well, I think definitely for probably the better. You think there's been obviously a number of weeks now where players and staff as well haven't been able to see their families or partners, which we all sort of knew would have an impact. You never quite know what it's going to feel like or how you're going to probably go throughout the whole time. But I definitely reckon it gives the group a lift in terms of being able to have that support and those people there for you sort of throughout the days and the weeks.
I don't know whether you can rate it out of 10 or maybe like at school an A, B, C, D or E, but how do you think that the club and the players have coped with the hub life, Bon? How difficult has it been?
Oh, it's definitely been a challenge. I think we always knew there was going to be, it was going to be a challenging period or challenging moments at times, but I really feel like the football club's done really everything they can to try and create a place and environment that's obviously not as homely as possible, but that'll help us the best way that it can to obviously deal with the challenges of being away from home for so long. And I feel like we've had a lot of people who are doing everything they can, a lot of staff and players who are trying to contribute to make it, you know, an experience that you sort of won't forget for the better, and look to sort of the positives of you know, being here and being able to play football and obviously continue to do what we do. So I won't grade it, but I definitely think that we've been pretty fortunate to be away and to have people try as hard as they can to you know, make this place as comfortable as possible.
Bont, when we see the Bulldogs play at their best, we think it's good enough to really compete against those top teams. But you guys are sitting 11th on the ladder. What's the one area of the game that you guys need to work on to make sure this back end of the season, the last six or seven games, that you push back into that finals contention?
Yeah, whether it's a specific game area, but it's actually just being able to probably concentrate and stay engaged with the game, you know, as much as possible, 100% of the time. I think the last couple of weeks especially, we've had probably patches of sort of 10 minutes or, quarters that have gone awry for us because we've just lacked a little bit of concentration and being able to play the game sort of out through every moment. Teams have scored in sort of flurries against us, particularly probably Brisbane and Port Adelaide, where we felt like we've had a pretty good grip and handle on the game. So for us, that's probably more a question of our leaders, myself and our more mature players in those moments being able to steady the ship a little bit and not let teams get on four or five sort of goal momentum runs. So we can't get scored against, obviously, that sort of quickly. So defensively, we've got to be better. But if we can sort of reduce those patches to just one or two goals or even find a way to get a goal back, I think that's going to help us for sure.
I think it's important to recognise that you've played Richmond, Port Adelaide and Brisbane in the last 3 weeks. That's as tough a run as you can get. Have you learnt enough out of that period against the best teams that you kind of know? You sort of touched on it then, but you kind of know that you're not far away, or things that you need to improve because you've been able to put yourself up against the best teams in the competition at the moment?
Yeah, I think when you look at that block of games, you're looking forward to the opportunities to play against those teams, especially the ones that are really starting to make things or shape the probably, you know, finals or top eight or whatever the case may be. But we're going into them, we always felt like we were ready and prepared with obviously a good enough game style, quality enough group to play against the best. And at different times, we probably felt like we've really matched it or even been able to get on top, but in different areas. But once again, just let ourselves down with periods of football, especially the Richmond game was the start. We weren't right on edge from the start. So they got a jump on us and we just couldn't catch back up. So that's the challenge probably with this game and the shortened quarters, that you can't really allow teams to get out to those sort of leads, and then it's pretty difficult to find your way back. So that's our thing. We've got to just be able to play each sort of quarter and sort of minute by minute and not let teams get away from us and continue to try and put our best sort of style forward for longer.
Rounds 14 to 17 are going to be compressed again. Do you enjoy that? Do you enjoy backing up quickly? Do you enjoy the four-day breaks? Or are you more of a traditionalist, like the 6 or 7 day breaks to let your body sort of heal and get back out in the training track and do some real work on the track?
Yeah, it's definitely been an interesting one to sort of assess and go through. And you sort of, each day after the game, whether it's sort of 4 or 5 day breaks, you are sort of assessing, oh, well, how would I go today? Or, you know, and that was probably in the lead up to the condensed period. But I haven't found it too challenging to probably adjust to personally, and I think the group's been okay too, because I think with the shortened quarters and the condensed game, you do find yourself pulling up a fair bit better a bit sooner. So I think now that we've had a look at it, I think we're prepared for it. We understand obviously the reasons behind it being condensed potentially again, so we'll find that out later today. But I think around the league, you know, there's injuries obviously, which is normal anyway, but I feel like we've coped or been able to cope the way probably we thought we were going to. So that's probably a good sign.
Is it something you could do more often through the season? Say if there was a time, now it's not going to be for a little while, Bont, but there was a time when there was a 27-game season.
What I'm soliciting myself to.
It's okay. If there's a 27-game season one day, and you'd have to do this for a couple of periods throughout a season, would you be able to do it for a period that long, or is this really just for an unusual world that we live in at the moment?
I guess I see it working for now. It's difficult, you know, 27 games is obviously a lot on the body, and that's once again, we're forecasting what it might be like. I'm not too sure, I guess. I feel like right now it depends on the game time. If the game time was to stay the same, you could potentially build an argument for it maybe working, but I'm sort of pretty happy still with the traditional sort of 22 home and away, and the shortened breaks if needed, but I sort of still feel like we've got it right, with our regular sort of season pre-sort of COVID.
Bont, will we see Lachie Hunter back anytime soon? He's a really important... Obviously, he played in the scratch match last weekend, but will we see him back in the senior team soon?
Hoping to. He, like you said, he has played in the last couple of scratchies, and he's coming along sort of pretty well. So that's all in our sort of circumstances, you just want him to obviously feel supported and like he's got people around him. And clearly we've got training again today and you know, the team hasn't been finalised, but we'll wait and see. It's, you know, at this stage he's in a good headspace and seems like he's going along okay, so hopefully not too far away.
Tell me about the impact of Alex Keith. A lot of people have been talking about Josh Bruce up the other end, but Alex Keith and what he's done for the back half of your team, what have you seen from him this year?
Yeah, he's just been awesome, and I think we knew what we were getting, obviously, when we brought him across to the club in terms of his sort of playing ability. But he's, I think he's really impressed us probably with his ability to sort of his leadership and his ability to be a bit of a general down back and support Woody and Zane Cordy in their sort of, you know, more senior roles, as well as helping some of the other ones. So he's obviously, you know, strength and intercept marking has been a real strength. But yeah, the one thing that's really impressed me is that, off-field sort of leadership and what he's been able to do for the defenders around him. So he's been super impressive. He's obviously playing the game incredibly well, but we're getting a lot more from just his playing, Keithy. So he's been awesome.
And from a team perspective, you're chasing your tail a little bit, pardon the pun, being the Dogs, but you're chasing your tail a little bit trying to lock in a spot in the eight at the moment. You're a game outside and you've got a very winnable game, obviously, on the weekend. My form ladder says you've had the fifth hardest run in the competition. With the limited amount of time left, is it, are you on edge for the every game from now to try and make it? Is that how it sort of sits with the Bulldogs, do you think?
I think it's pretty important for us to treat each game, with the utmost importance. I think you don't, especially in the way that they're probably season's panning out, you don't want to let one drop sort of at any point, really, because of the unsurety probably around that sort of top eight-ish. But we just need to keep winning games. That's probably our mentality going to each one, thinking that we need to win it. And that does put you on edge a little bit. But I think that sort of mentality can be really beneficial if you treat it the right way. So we just want to obviously be able to bring our best style and brand sort of every week. And it probably starts obviously again on Sunday.
Brent Harvey texts me this morning. He goes, make sure you give me the tip early before you go on air with it. Not that we get it any earlier. I said, I'll just listen to the show, mate. You'll find out when everyone else does. He's joined us for the Friday Footy Preview, the Kangaroos champion. Hello, Boomer.
Yeah, definitely do not say that. I am not an Essendon player.
He wishes.
Never wants to be.
No one would ever wish.
Good morning, boys. Good morning, boys. I know you've probably already covered it, but what a riveting game of football last night. One of the flag favourites at the start of the year managed to kick a massive three goals for the game. So I'm up and about this morning. It's fantastic.
I want to just flesh that out a bit with you. We had a bit of a conversation about it earlier this morning, Boomer, but I want to find out what you think about the Giants situation. Why can't they score? The past 12 games, they've had, at halftime, they've had scores like this. 1-3, 1-4, 1-6. 2-5, 2-5, 2-6. That's 6 of their last 12 games. They've managed a score of 2 at half-time with what we all think is a super talented list. And the draft position would say you cannot dispute that. What's happened at the Giants in your eye?
In my eye, they're inside 50s. I call it the most important kick in the game. A lot of people argue with me and say, no, it can't be. The goal is the most important kick. But the inside 50 kick is the most important kick for me in football. And they haven't got... Look, I look at Josh Kelly, I look at Taranto. They've got some decent quality ball users, but at the minute, they're just there's no smooth ball movement at the back half. I think that they get all their run from the back half with Williams and Lockie Whitfield running off. But it's in that, and I know we argued about this a little bit a couple of weeks ago, that they don't actually get too much run from the half back. But it's the middle part of the ground. Their ball users need to win the ball forward of centre and kick the ball in. Now, they've got a good forward line. I think their three tools in Cameron, who's not in great form, but Himmelberg and Finlayson, can actually mark the ball and kick the ball. But you've got to get it into them in a good position. I just don't think they're doing it at the minute. And you know what? They're sitting on the ropes early. You mentioned those last six games of 1, 2 and 3 was their maximum. They're sitting on their ropes early and they're waiting to see how the game unfolds rather than getting on the front foot. Teams have got to be more aggressive, and the Giants play their best football when they're more aggressive for me, and they're not doing that at the minute. They're waiting to be punched before they punch.
So why do you think that's happening? Because I think you're right. I think teams, it's not just the Giants that fall into this category. A lot of teams in the competition are seemingly playing that style of play. Is it the old take a game deep, big bash style, just get the limit, and then the last three overs go berserk and try and win? Is that what they're doing because of the shortened quarters?
Well, yeah, I think a lot of teams are doing that, sitting on the ropes, playing a little bit of rope-a-dope and saying, rightio, well, let's get the half-time reassess. Where, you know what, if you're leading at quarter-time or half-time now, the stats say that you win the game. So I don't know why teams just don't come out the blocks. I'm sure they all try to. It's easy to sit back here and say, get out there and kick the first 6, you're going to win the game. Absolutely, that's easy. But you've got to be willing to have a real crunch at the start of the game. And it, for me, it just looks like football at the minute. Everybody's holding back.
It's a problem for the Giants, particularly by a lot of football teams at the moment. Let's talk about your club just for a second. Ben Cunnington ruled out for the season. yesterday from the Kangaroos, put on ice, and they'll fix him up over the summer, hopefully, and get him ready for 2021. That's a big blow, Boomer, because without him, you are a very different football team.
Yes, we certainly are. And Ben is not underrated within the football club. I think I've said this before on this show that he's certainly not underrated within the four walls at Arden Street. But outside, people are giving him respect now, but he is a superstar of the competition. I put him up against anybody in the midfield and would pick him every day of the week in terms of in-close, bullish work. Yeah. He's an absolute bull. I love watching him play. He's a great fella. And it is a big setback for not only the football club, but for Ben as well, to see now how he bounces back. Let's be completely honest, he hasn't got the best athlete's body I've ever seen. So it's going to be challenging times for him to come out and make sure that he's fit and ready to go next year, which I'm sure he will be. He's pretty professional, Ben. And, you know, he's got his farm back at home. So when he gets out of this environment, he can go back and build some fences and get strong again and hopefully have a big 2021.
Might not have the athlete's body, but absolutely loves football. He loves playing. He loves loves to compete. So he'll be back. He'll be back bigger and better than ever.
Going to need him too.
Well, Rabbit, there's certain blokes very different. There's certain blokes in the competition that don't need the athlete's body. Ben's certainly one of them because he doesn't get out and run 16K like the elite midfielders. He does all his work in close and one of the best players in close that I've seen.
He's a footballer, Rami. He knows how to play the game. You don't need to be an athlete to play the game necessarily, particularly the way that he plays it. So, that's something where you need to be wary of and conscious of all the way through. If you've got someone who can play the game, might not look like Usain Bolt, just get him. Get him because they can play the game. It's a unique game in many respects. Let's have a look tonight, boys, at Friday Night Footy because it's worth spending a bit of time on this game. The Cats and the Power, two of the best teams in football, do it very differently, but they're no doubt two of the most powerful teams in the game. Tonight at Metricon Stadium, there's a couple of changes for both teams. Lachie Fogarty and Sam Simpson come in for the Cats. Brad Close and Jack Stephen are both managed. And for the Power, Sam Mays and Stephen Motlop come in. Cam Sutcliffe and Jared Leanett have been omitted. Boomer, for you, we've seen the Cats. They're a team that not many people talk about. When you talk about premiership contenders, up until this point anyway, they haven't really been front of mind in the conversation. Two-part question, why do you think that is, and where do you see them at the moment, the Cats?
I'm not sure why people are not talking about the Cats. Maybe they drop one every 3 weeks and people just think, oh, they can't win it. I think the Cats are going well, and when they're firing, they are very well. Their biggest improvement is going to come from their small forwards. I know Myers has kicked 11 goals, but Ablett's out, Atkins is not playing, Dalhouse is still out, and I'll put Narkle in that position as well. So they can kick a lot more goals when those smalls are back. At the minute, they've got players who have just come into the team, and you certainly wouldn't expect them to kick two or three. But when your Ablett's are in and your Atkins, who puts amazing pressure on, Dalhouse does a little bit of both, kick goals, and Narkle's a little fly around the ground. He seems to be a little bit everywhere when he's playing. So I think their biggest improvement comes from their small forwards, and I think they're a big chance. You know what Dangerfield can do. Duncan's playing a big role in their team. So I don't know why people are not talking about Geelong and putting them in that top echelon. They are third on the ladder. They win tonight. They go one game behind, you know, what we say the best team in the competition is in Port Adelaide, who are two games clear. So Geelong have got enormous upside for me. Hawkins has kicked 24 goals, I think, and leading the Coleman. I think they should be start talking about the Cats.
Why do you reckon, Rammer, that they don't get the love? Is it because they're seen as a team that sucks the life out of games and it's not aggressive footy and they just sort of get out of the line at times with the last 10 or 15 minute burst every now and then? Why is it about the Cats that don't get the love?
Because they've been up there for so long. They're such an ultra consistent team the way they go about. I think they don't get the love because, and I'm one of them, I think they could be the best attacking team in the competition. When they actually move the ball quickly and go direct, they score really easily. Really, really. Like, you look at the game last week, you know, Hawkins dominates, Rowan dominates. They did it easy. The game looked really easy. It's when they make the game hard, you go, geez, what are you doing, guys? You're so much better than this when you actually move the ball and take risks, because they do have a great They do have a great list. They've got great players, obviously, Selwood, Dangerfield, Hawkins, etc. But I think tonight is a real matchups game. It's both teams finding the edges there. Now, is there a perfect matchup for Charlie Dixon in Geelong's defence? Does Harry Taylor go to him or does Blitzarves go to him? They've used Blitzarves a lot in the ruck over recent weeks. Is there a perfect matchup for Tom Hawkins in Port Adelaide's defence? Does Jonas go to him or who actually goes to Hawkins? Then you look around the edges. Butters has been brilliant the last couple of weeks. Which of the Geelong defenders goes here? It's probably Mark O'Connor, who's done some really good shutdown roles over recent weeks. Do the midfields go head-to-head? Does Dangerfield and Boat go head-to-head? Does Selwood and Pal Pepper or the like go head-to-head? Who matches up on Robbie Gray? Robbie Gray was really, really, really dangerous against the Tigers. You know, 20 possessions and 3 goals. So I think tonight, more than ever, matchups are really, really critical. And which team get them right early in this game will win.
Well, I think to answer your question half about the Cats is that I think a lot of it is down to having been disappointing in final series over the last 5 or 6 years, that I think that's counted against their image, their perception a little bit, that they haven't got it done then. And when you then sort of couple that with them sort of being a more defensive-minded team, and we bemoan the Giants not going fast, and I think Geelong, as Rammer alluded to, can fall into that category. But I think where Geelong's made the shift, and this is why I'm really keen on Geelong tonight, if you go all the way back to that game they beat, where they beat Brisbane, they were excellent defensively that night, and they kept Brisbane to, you know, a very low score, 46 points I think it was. And then moving back up from that game, they lost to Collingwood but still kept them to 57 points. They kept Fremantle to 16 points in the wet. They kept West Coast to 42 points in the first half. And then in the last 2 weeks, North Melbourne kept them to 57 and they kept St Kilda to 34. So defensively, they're fine, but they weren't scoring. The last 2 weeks, they've gone 90 and 93, which I think is significant, particularly the 93 against St Kilda, and even to score 64 against West Coast, where they actually had control of that game for the first half, where they led by 16 points. So I reckon we're seeing them change. I reckon that we're seeing them score a little bit more, and to me, that better balance puts them in the premiership conversation because we know how good they are defensively.
Yep. They've got to separate the defence if they're going to win this tonight, the Power. They've got to isolate the defenders, keep Harry away from Tom Stewart, keep Mark away from Harry, keep Lockie away from Mark. You've got to take them away from each other so they can't support each other in the air. So yuck kicks into forward 50, Rammer, are a disaster for the Power tonight, which is not something they're necessarily keen to do too often, the Power, which is why they're able to score, I reckon.
The Power forwards are talented enough to win those one-on-ones. I mentioned Gray, Butters, Dixon, Georgiades looks like he's going to be a real player moving into the future. Is Rosie back? I haven't looked at the teams yet.
Rosie's not back.
So that's disappointing, obviously, for the Power. But those four that I mentioned, if they get enough separation from... like Tom Stewart, he's a super player. He broke his collarbones, come back. Doesn't look like he's missed a beat. The Port Adelaide put someone defensive on him, which we've seen other teams try to do with Stewart.
He's a terrific player, Tom Stewart. He's really important player.
So for the three of you, who is it more about tonight? Is it about Port Adelaide? Because if they knock off another challenger, there's almost nothing left for them to prove. Or for Geelong, if they knock off Port Adelaide, who's on top of the ladder, we go, oh, gee, they're a serious contender. Or is it for both of them? It's just as much for both.
I think it's for both, I must admit. I don't think there's anyone that would be getting more out of this from a good performance tonight than the other, either team. I'm not sure what you think, Rammer and Boomer.
Probably Port for me, Boomer. I think momentum's a wonderful thing in football. Port didn't make the finals last year. They're riding a wave at the moment. So that momentum, if they can continue it, will go a long way to helping them in the finals. Geelong are going to be there. I think we know they're going to be there, but it's up to Geelong when they go into a final series with how they play, which will determine how far they go, Whitey. Boomer.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ramo. I think Port, for me, after not making the finals last year, a little bit of talk about Kenny Hinckley and will he be around if they don't make the finals again. So for me, it's Port. Sitting on top of the ladder, there's an expectation. Not sure how well they can deal with it, that expectation. Haven't won a flag since being in the... Oh, sorry, they have won a flag. They haven't won a flag for a long time now with a decent list. So for me, look, I think Port Adelaide have got the best forward in the competition. I love watching Charlie Dixon play. I love the anger on his face. He goes for his marks. He's aggressive. And you know what? They've got the most goal scorers in the competition in terms of over five. So they've got nine players that have kicked five or more goals in the competition. And their spread through the midfield and their small forwards is really, really good.
Who's going to win? Boomer?
Port for me. I think Port are on a little roll and I think they're going to continue.
Rammer?
How sad is that? We're talking about players with over five goals and we're more than halfway into the season.
Halfway into the season. But it's, check the stats. Yeah. It's amazing.
I know. Geelong tonight, please.
Geelong for you. Whitey, you're going Geelong?
Yep, I'm with Geelong.
I'm on the power. Their midfield brigade will give them that territory they need and they will win the game. Should be a good one, though. A couple of goals either way, you would think.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.